What's up, people? I'm Garrett Johnson, and you're listening to Consider Before Consuming, a podcast by Fight the New Drug. Before we jump into today's conversation, I just want to remind you guys that change begins with one. That's the theme during this No Porn November, and it's the truth. Change begins with one. So I want to challenge you to do your part, whatever that may be. There are countless ways for you to get involved. For example, you can share a Fight the New Drug blog post, rep some of Fight the New Drug's merch, donate by texting CONSIDER to 43506, host a screening of the documentary Brain Heart World. You can start a meaningful conversation with someone you care about using the conversation blueprint. You can find that at ftnd.org/blueprint. You can coordinate a live presentation in your area. Another opportunity to get involved is coming soon. November 22nd is Rep the Movement Day. So we invite you to post on your social media on November 22nd using hashtag Rep the Movement. That's November 22nd, so put it on your calendar. On today's episode, we sit down with Ellie Nash. Ellie is from the East Coast. He's a husband, father, entrepreneur, public speaker, and so much more. As a child, Ellie experienced childhood sexual abuse, which has had many negative impacts in his life. Later in life, Ellie gradually developed an addiction to pornography and sex, but was in denial for a period of time. His addiction led him to being unfaithful with his girlfriend. And I just want to be very clear that he cheated on his girlfriend, who later became his wife, after some healing. During the conversation, Ellie says, and I quote, "The explanation that I had to give my wife was that I cheated on her, but they weren't married at the time." For Ellie, his wife, and their family, I think it's important to make that clarification that he didn't cheat on her while they're married. After he told the truth, they decided to take a break and allow Ellie to work on himself. Through honesty, education, vulnerability, and action, he was able to transition his mindset back to a healthy state. He reconnected with his girlfriend, they later married, and now have a couple kids together. The following podcast episode contains graphic descriptions of sexual abuse. Listener discretion is advised. We hope you enjoy this episode of Consider Before Consuming. We want to welcome to the podcast Ellie Nash. Ellie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for having me, Garrett.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for being here. And the reason why I reached out to you is because you have done a TED Talk recently. When did you do that? When did you record that?
It was in April, I believe. Yeah, mid-April.
Okay, and
took
then
a couple months to release.
Yeah, it just released pretty recently, and I was looking at the TED Talk, and the name of the TED Talk for our listeners is "Escaping Porn Addiction," and as of the time we are recording this, it has 178,927 views. So, how does that feel to know that 178,927 people as of right now know that you had a challenge with pornography?
it's been a wave of a bunch of different emotions, to be honest.
I can imagine.
I guess I'll take you into the story because I like stories. Take you into the story of how I came about to make that decision. I guess it was a part of me that always knew I was going to do a talk or a TED Talk. I had no idea what the subject was going to be about or when I would do it. But 4 or 5 years ago, I saw the experience. I had the experience of sharing parts of my story, and my story then, or that element of my story, was being sexually abused for a 3-year period as a child, and I carried a lot of shame around that. And one day, I decided that I need to speak about this. And what the reason I wanted to speak about that was not for my own personal benefit. I didn't realize that there was going to be personal benefit to it. It was just that I knew it happened to many people, and I didn't feel that adults were doing enough about it, especially where I grew up. I grew up in a very religious environment. And in that environment, for whatever reason, you know, sex can't be mentioned and sex abuse can't be mentioned. So it's almost as if a kid would say something, "Hey, this happened to me," they were shut down for saying it. And I felt like I had an important message to share around that. I shared, and I found it not only to be effective in terms of helping to change the conversation in the community where I grew up in, but it was phenomenally healing to do it. And what I mean by that specifically is that I found a lot of, like, I felt like I uncovered the gift by sharing my story. I felt like I uncovered the gift in my story, and it's created a connection between me and many other people. Probably the most glaring example was when someone reached out to me after a talk I gave up in New York, and he sent me a message and he said, you know, I've never realized the way my abuse affected me until I heard you talk about it, and I realized that some of what you're dealing with today, I'm also dealing with, but I disconnected it from the abuse. I said, you know, there were kind of two separate things. My life is shit today is one reality, and I was abused 20 years ago, but that can't really be playing a role. And my central message in my talks was that no, sex abuse is a lifelong sentence, and the fact that in the sense that someone doesn't have to be a victim forever, but there are going to be struggles that come out of that, that's just someone's life because of sex abuse. And when he heard that, he told me he checked himself into rehab because he was dealing, I believe it was with drug addiction, but it may have been alcohol addiction. And he checked himself to rehab understanding that, hey, there's some stuff that he's got to deal with. And that hit me hard and said, wow, you know, I can't imagine how many people in this guy's life were really excited to hear that he's taking this problem seriously finally. And my talk, you know, I have family members and relatives who struggle with addiction. And I know how important it was for me to, you know, how much value it would be for me to be able to get them to take that seriously. And I've had multiple conversations about it, as have others in my family. So imagine a speech that I gave is what influenced this guy to go to rehab. It's like, wow, there's a lot of power in that. And we connected over that. And I realized the power of sharing one story. So fast forward 4 or 5 years later, and now I'm in a completely different situation. I'm married. I have two kids now. At the time of the TED Talk, I had one. But I knew I wanted to share, but I also realized that I'm not just dragging myself through this, right? Because it's one thing when you say 178,000 people know that I'm addicted to porn, but now my wife, her family, her friends know that she's married to someone who struggles with porn addiction.
Yeah. There's ripple effects, and she's dealing with a different aspect of it, right?
Yeah. You know, the first thought that came to my head when Ted published the talk?
What was it?
Is that my son, who's 1 year old, is one day going to be a teenager. Mm-hmm. And if someone looks up his dad, probably the first thing that's going to come up is going to be that TED Talk. You just Google my name. The first thing that comes up now is that TED Talk because of their reach.
Right.
And
yeah, yes. That's intimidating. That's a daunting thought in some ways.
It is. And I was like, oh shit, what did I do to him?
Right. I chuckle. I have three kids as well. And I also have had a challenge with pornography. And I did some projects that are out on the internet as well to build awareness. And so I can kind of relate to that a little bit. So I can understand that. But
how did you deal with that? Maybe you can help. Maybe you can help me with that.
Yeah. So my,
it's still a thought.
My process of healing, that transition of mindset, the way I destroyed the shame was very similar to the way that you've destroyed the shame in your life, was through sharing your story and your experience. And what I did after I heard about the science, facts, and personal accounts around pornography, that released some of the shame because I realized that I wasn't the only one dealing with it.
Right.
And so the education helped me. But then even further than that, I saw that not many people were talking about this challenge. And so I was about to turn 30 years old, and I'm decent at endurance events. And so I ran 30 marathons in 30 days wearing handcuffs, representing like the addictive nature of pornography. And then after that, I rode my bike across the United States from Virginia to San Francisco, dragging chains, which represented the heaviness of addiction. And by day 21, those chains had, the carabiners that held the chains to my bike had worn away. And so I finished out and finished in at the Golden Gate Bridge without any chains. And my wife rode the last mile with me. So that's kind of how I shed the chains of shame. And so anyway,
The image of that just gave me chills, right? Of the chains kind of falling off over time.
Well, yeah, and as you spoke about your, just as we've spoke over the last few minutes, and you mentioned like your sexual abuse as a child, and then using that terrible experience for good in the world, for healing yourself, helping heal yourself, and then helping heal others. I also got chills a few times as you were talking about that. And that's one thing that I'm so amazed at by you, Ellie, is that that you're willing to share and that you have a very unique perspective because you've gone through the shame, you felt the shame, and you've turned that terrible experience into something so powerful. And
can do you recall how you said when you mentioned go ahead let me ask your question?
No, you're good.
I think we're going in the same direction. So
what were you gonna say?
What I was going to say is, do you recall how you, when you said that you got rid of shame by realizing that you're no longer alone, or you're no longer the only one, you use some sort of phrase like that,
right?
Is that's the antidote to shame. I think shame feels so powerful and intense and something that we'll never be able to release ourselves from.
Right.
But when I get messages from people, and I've been getting every day since the TED Talk, some amazing messages. I can read a couple.
Yeah.
Just, hi, Ellie, hope you're doing well. Just wanted to share with you that as of today, I'm 2 months off porn, and I really can't thank you enough for all your support in this process. I'm really blessed to have you in my life. This guy saw my talk very early on, and we spoke about it. Thank you for your TED talk about porn addiction. I'm 20 years old and I've been fighting it for 8 years. Thank you for talking about it. It means a lot. And just these messages, I mean, it's that when I read that message, I may be imagining some things, but this guy tells me he's 20 years old. He's been fighting it for 8 years. I don't think he's told that to too many people. I don't think I'm in a large group right there. And that's what I imagine. It's like, okay, this person just shared that with someone else. I can respond with something positively. And hopefully he can share that with a third person.
Right. Exactly.
It's and eventually get
effect.
Help.
It's a butterfly effect of your challenge and sharing that challenge.
I'll tell you a cool story is we're working at on a project, like a documentary project, that not related to porn addiction, just in my business. And because I talk about porn addiction in one of the conversations that were recorded between me and this other individual that that's the feature of the documentary, he mentions porn, and he started asking me a lot of questions around porn and how it affects his life, and on we're going. Two or three days later, I get a call from, I don't remember if he was the video guy or the sound guy, like one of the production people in the room who you're not even paying attention to, right? I'm sitting there having a conversation with this guy, and these are the professionals documenting the conversation. So one of them reaches out to me saying, you know, can we chat about something? And I thought it was a business conversation. And I said, you know, I'm not the right person to talk to. There's someone else handling that. So he said, no, it's kind of personal. And I said, what's up? So he said, we got on the phone. And he says, you know, as soon as you guys started talking and the conversation went to porn addiction, it was like my heart dropped because I've been fighting for this since I'm 15 years old. The guy's probably in his 40s today. I've been fighting this since I'm 15 years old. I've never told anyone. I once brought it up in passing about 10 years ago in a therapist's office, and he looked at me funny, and I never brought it up again.
Interesting.
He's married. He has a couple of kids. We spoke about it, and I said, listen, at some point in time, he said, how did you get over it? And I said, I don't know that there's one way, but I basically made it my top priority is the best way I can answer that question. And I said, whatever I need to do in order to kick it, if it's legal, I'm doing it. And I said, that was the approach. I imagine as part of that, if you take that intense of an approach as I did, you're going to have to talk to your wife at some point. I said, I can never imagine telling my wife. I said, my wife's been very supportive. I can't guarantee you that's going to be the case. I really don't see how you're going to invest yourself in a process of getting rid of this and putting, you know, the blocks and controls and whatever else you figure out you need to do in order to do that without your wife knowing. It just seems pretty difficult. And that secret also creates pain. I'm not saying it has to happen today, but at some point in time, that conversation may have to take place.
Right.
The very next day, I got a message from him. He said, I spoke to my wife about it. She was so supportive. It was a great conversation. Thanks so much. Those are amazing.
Wow. That is amazing. It puts a smile on my face, to be honest, to hear those kinds of stories. So Eli, what was your talking about telling your significant other that you have a challenge of pornography? How was that for you? When did she find out and how did that happen?
So in my case, my journey didn't end with pornography. It progressed beyond pornography. And the explanation I had to give my wife was that I cheated on her. She wasn't on at the time, but I'll share a little bit of my story and I think it may help. But, like I said, I went beyond pornography and I only realized afterwards how insidious pornography was. I thought it was the best of the behaviors I was engaged in. Prior to getting into pornography, I don't think it starts there for a lot of people. For me, it started, and I share some of this in the TED Talk. It started with magazines that showed up to the house. You know, whether it was J. Crew catalogs or I don't even remember some of them. And, you know, the more exciting days were like a Victoria's Secret or a Sports Illustrated swimsuit would show up. And then, you know, I would have this material. One of the things I did is I stored these all over the house. And, you know, I'm 34 today, right? So some of what I experienced is kind of pre-internet.
Right.
You know, or pre the explosion of the internet, certainly pre smartphone. So I can't even imagine what it would have been like as a child if I had access to these devices, because I had to go through great lengths to just get what I needed.
Yeah. On your TED Talk, you talk about the magic mailbox. And today, kids are dealing with that magic mailbox right in their pocket, kind of like what you're saying.
Yeah. And I experienced that progression exactly. At first, the magic mailbox was the physical mailbox in my home.
Right.
And then eventually it became the computer, the internet itself, which then was dial-up. But at the same point in time, you know, when I progressed from the magazines hidden all over my house, eventually, I guess we're late 90s at this stage, my sister had won a computer. This is actually a cool story and talks about, someone's wondering, do I watch porn or I'm an addict? If you got a story like this, you're an addict. So I know. So it's probably 13 years old. My sister won a computer from some sort of auction of sorts, right? You put 10 bucks in and they draw a raffle, and she won, I remember, a compact Presario computer. She's real happy with it. You know, she set it up, but it was her computer and she used it for her work and her games and everything else. At night, I can use the computer, but only if I asked her permission. At night, I would sneak onto the computer and I started watching porn and mostly pictures, and I would download and save the pictures onto different areas in the computer, different folders in the computer. And I just engage in this regularly, just kind of saving these pictures. I don't know if my sister knew what I was doing. I actually never had the conversation with her. Maybe this podcast will stimulate that. But she started locking her computer, and I wasn't happy with this. So I started researching ways that I can get around locks. And there are some, you know, like common locks, you can go safe mode and stuff like that. And with each lock that I got around, she would add a different kind of lock on it, different kind of password. So at one point, she installed a password that as soon as the computer turned on, even before the like Windows booted up, the very first thing was that a password popped up. And I was like, okay, how am I going to get around this? I don't have the safe mode. I can't go around, you know, coming with lower access, upgrading my access. I couldn't do anything. And I was learning these tricks, not because I knew computers, but I was researching in order to be able to watch porn at night.
Right.
And at the lengths we go.
That's it. That's what I was thinking. That's some, I don't know the words. You're persistent trying to find that nudity.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And that's why I say, if it goes to this lens, it's not just a habit, it's an addiction.
Right.
So then, you know, I continued researching and I knew a couple of, you know, guys in my school who had more experience with computers, and I described the password. One of the guys comes over to my house, looks at it, and he says, I think I know how to get rid of this. And he told me, if I take apart the computer, there's a little tiny battery. I don't know if computers are still made this way, but there's a little tiny battery in there that even when the computer is off, it's kind of responsible for maintaining the time and the date and things like that on the computer, right? Whenever we turn on a computer, even if you unplug it, that's still there. He said, it's that little battery that's responsible for that. He said, if you can go in there, find where the battery is, remove it, keep it out for a couple minutes. When you put that back in, that password should be gone.
I feel like I'm watching a movie right now. So I think that you found your niche of storytelling, because I feel like I'm watching like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, like porn edition or something. Yeah. Okay, keep going.
So anyway, I got through the computer that time. The password was gone. And after that, my sister just completely gave up and I was able to use the computer whenever I wanted. And it was really nightly what I would watch. And at the time I was Sabbath observant, so I couldn't use a computer on the Sabbath. And that's when I still continued to use the stash of different catalogs or magazines that I had. So I got into this because you asked me about my wife and how she found out.
Right.
When I was, fast forward a few years, I'm in school now in Canada. And in Canada, the drinking age in pretty much all ages is 18 years old. And a friend of mine started talking to me about strip clubs. And he, I told him, you got to take me to this place. Like, I didn't even know that such things existed. And you see some things in movies, but, you know, three or four blocks from my school where I was going to, there was a strip club. And he told me, you got to take me. And he took me one time, and that was a game changer for me. And, you know, all of those things that I had watched on porn, now to be able to experience live and feel, you know, the touch and everything else was exhilarating. And that started a pretty progressive escalation into that world, right? Strip clubs and beyond that, if you just kind of imagine.
Right.
And when I met my wife 8 or 9 years later, I was engaged in these behaviors on a regular basis. A lot of pornography, a lot of strip clubs. And, you know, a lot of pornography, a lot of strip clubs, and just a lot of focus on women in general. And, even while dating her, when I first started dating her, I thought she was different. And I mentioned this in the TED talk that for a few months I was off the hook. I didn't want to watch porn. It was like when I started CrossFit. CrossFit and dating her were the two times that I stayed away from porn for like 2 or 3 months inexplicably. And I was like, wow, I'm cured. And then in both times they came back. But with CrossFit, I didn't feel like I was cheating on CrossFit. With my wife, I did. Right. And then the worse I felt about the porn, the more I began engaging in the behaviors that are beyond porn because of that shame cycle. And I started doing all the same behaviors that I was engaging in previously, like the strip clubs and reaching out to all, you know, other women I had dated in the past or had flings with, and eventually my wife found out about that. It was extremely uncomfortable, but it was one of the most powerful moments in my life. The reason is because I realized how much I hurt her when I cheated on her. And when I realized how much I hurt her, I realized how much she cares about me. And to this day, it's one of the things that keep me sober. One of the things that keep me away from porn is that I know that not only can I never get away from porn, but I know that it'll get me back to all those other places that I want to stay away from. And I'll have a very difficult time staying faithful, even if we don't consider porn cheating, but staying faithful with another human being. Porn will take me there, and I just know it. And I have this picture in my head, like seared into my brain, of the look she had on her face when she found out I cheated on her, and it just shattered glass is the only way I can describe the look, just a completely broken person. And seeing how I can hurt someone so much, I said, I don't want to do that to another person anymore. I don't want to hurt someone that badly. And it also made me realize that I matter, that my decisions, you know, I guess I had such a low self-esteem that I thought what I do doesn't matter to anyone. And it doesn't, like, would she really care if I cheated on her? I couldn't even imagine she liked me that much. And that experience is one of the like kind of the bottom that addicts talk about. Like, that was a bottom for me, realizing I wanted to be a nice guy. I want to do right by people. And I hurt this other human being so badly because of what I did. And I said, I'm done. I don't want to do that to someone again.
So do you consider that your biggest aha moment when she found out the truth?
There were a number of different ones. Another one was finding out that I was addicted. I did not know that there was such a thing as porn addiction or sex addiction. I couldn't imagine that it even existed. We hear a lot about drug addiction and alcohol addiction, but we don't hear that much. I mean, you guys, obviously, you're in that world and you're talking a lot about the effects of pornography and how it's just like a drug. It's in your name, but that's, I think, part of your point in your name, right? Like, fight the new drug. This is a drug. This is not some harmless behavior. This is as powerful a drug as exists if you understand the science behind it. And I had gone to therapy several years before meeting my wife to deal with the effects of the sexual abuse. And as I was working through that, my therapist suggested that some of these sexual behaviors I was engaging in may be compulsive. And he gave me a book. I don't know if you've ever read it. It's called Out of the Shadows by Patrick Carnes.
No, I haven't.
So Patrick Carnes is pretty much the father of the sex addiction movement. He's the one who, as far as I know, he's the one who considered sex an addiction. The whole addiction field and all of this is relatively new. AA is, I believe, founded in 1930s. And a lot of these programs that others look at today, Gamblers Anonymous or Food Addicts Anonymous or Overeaters Anonymous or Sex Addicts Anonymous or Sexaholics Anonymous, all of these weren't always viewed as an addiction. And Patrick Carnes, I believe, was the most vocal about it. Whether he was the first one to say it, I don't know. But he was the most vocal about it. And he wrote a number of books on the subject, one of which was Out of the Shadows. My therapist gave me the book, and a few days later I returned it to him and I said, this isn't me. I was probably about 23 or 24 years old. And the reason it wasn't me is because I had never really tried to stop. I made promises to myself that I would stop, but I never went through actual serious efforts to try to stop. I was ashamed of the porn. I was ashamed of these things, but it wasn't like this. It wasn't what I did afterwards, which was a real concerted effort to stop, which happened after I started dating my now wife. And there I did make a concerted effort to stop. And the more I tried to stop, the more I did it.
Interesting.
And that's when I went back and read the book again. And I was like, wow, this guy Patrick Carnes is pretty smart. He learned a lot about me in a few years. So, yeah.
So the more you attempted to stop, once you gave it that true attempt, the more you attempted to stop, the more you consumed, the more you engaged in that behavior?
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought about it much more. My first attempts at trying to stop, said, okay, I can't. This is before my wife found out, right? It was just my own shame. I had started watching porn again. I said, okay, I can't do this. And a lot of shame came over me. And that night I was like, you know, I'm not feeling so well. And I just, my car, somehow there was like this magnet in my car and in the local strip club. And it just felt like it was pulling my car there. I don't know another way to describe it. I was like, I can't do anything else but drive there. And then I felt bad about that. So, you know, then I called an ex-girlfriend, and then I felt bad about that, and it kept spinning further and further out of control.
Interesting. I think it's interesting that you've mentioned like this magic mailbox and this magic magnet, like the car pulling you towards that strip club. It's something that we can kind of chuckle about now, but the reality is that's such a real thing that people deal with, where they're wanting to change, they're wanting to make a difference, they're trying to become they're trying to stop this unhealthy behavior, but like you said, this magnet is attaching them to it. It drives them to it. So you said that was your first aha moment. Your biggest aha moment was
There were a couple different ones. There wasn't one, but recognizing that I'm an addict,
that was
like that,
and also
realization.
An aha
I was
moment.
Like, I'm trying to stop. I read that book again. And I was like, holy shit, I'm an addict. And I had disdain for addicts. I missed that point. I had a lot of disdain for drug addicts and alcoholics. I looked down at them. I had seen a lot of it. And I was like, wow, like, what's wrong with these people? Why can't they get themselves together?
It's a heavy word.
An addict, yeah.
So, of course, at 24 years old, you don't want that. You don't want to admit that you're addicted.
It's huge. I mean, the addiction lives in denial. That's the bottom line. Denial about how real it is. Denial about the consequences to ourselves and others. There's just so much denial. So much denial. Someone who reached out to me about my TED Talk, I said, how do I know if I'm an addict? And I said, have you ever tried to stop? Like, I don't know if I'm addicted to porn. I said, have you ever tried to stop? So he said, yeah, a bunch of times. So I said, okay, then you may want to consider it. He says, but it keeps me from cheating on my wife. So he tells me, it keeps me from cheating on my wife. I said, does your wife know that you're doing this? He says, no. So I said, well, if you define cheating a little more broadly, if we define it as lying, or if you define it as taking away everything you have to offer someone, then you already are.
Right.
You know, so...
That deception.
That to me is an example of just, it's denial. I'm engaging in porn because it keeps me from cheating on my wife. So you're telling me the reason that you're engaging in porn. That's what I was telling you. You're telling me the reason you're engaging in porn is to be good to your wife. I mean, that's, I want to be better to her. It's coming from like this altruistic place. Like, I just want to be good to her. Like, come on, man, don't kid yourself. You can't stop watching porn.
Yeah.
You watch it because it makes you feel good. Not so that she doesn't feel worse. Because if she knew about this, she'd be devastated.
Right. Did you ever have a follow-up conversation with this guy?
I haven't, no.
Oh, interesting. So one question I have, Ellie, is going to your sexual abuse as a child. You talked about the magic mailbox as kind of your introduction into that high that pornography can give you. And then it progressed towards your sister winning the computer. And then at 18 in Canada, the strip club 3 miles away from your school. So that was some of the progression. But do you think some of it stemmed from your abuse that you received or that you were a victim of?
I would imagine so. You know, just in terms of the type of porn that I like to look at, I think was, or where it got to. Yeah, I think it mimics some of those things, right? I was locked in a room, mounted by a guy. I was unable to move my arms, unable to move my legs, had a very, very difficult time breathing while he brought himself to orgasm. And yeah, so is it any mistake that some of the categories of porn, you know, and you guys talk about this a lot, I fight the new drug, which I like, is that we're not watching missionary porn. That's how it's, we're not watching, I guess I heard someone call it, we watch hands-off sex. We're not watching missionary sex. That's not what's going on. Are you talking like hardcore bondage, beating people? I mean, there's some very abusive stuff that are being watched. And I think that I certainly was recreating some of those early feelings in me. I was recreating there. Is it what led me to porn to begin with? I mean, listen, women are attractive, right? There's no, right. We'll see that. So there's some natural stuff.
So
that,
biology.
That goes on.
Yeah.
There's a biology that plays. I mean, everything plays into it for sure. But I don't think it's a mistake that I was abused sexually and I became a sex addict.
Do you know?
In terms of the sex abuse conversation, someone, people often have these questions for me after I speak. Is how do I know if I'm a porn addict? Or how do I know if I was sexually abused? So, you know, sexually abused is kind of a vague term. We don't know what it means and exactly where someone went. Let me simplify it. And one way I simplify it is say, was your sexuality abused? And when you look at it that way, if a kid at 7 years old happened to see pornography, no one introduced him to it. He just stumbled onto his father's porn collection at 7 years old, or now in today's day and age, he stumbled into it on the internet. That abuses a kid's sexuality. I don't know any other way to say it.
Wow. You're right.
And then the templates change. After that, the templates change.
Wow. I've never heard it said that way before.
The abuse sexuality, that the sexuality is abused?
Yeah, I liked your question of, was your sexuality abused? And how porn can abuse a person's sexuality.
Yeah, I've had a lot of, there isn't only one aha moment. That's why I don't have exactly that, but a major aha moment for me. So I live in Miami Beach, and I go to recovery meetings. I meet a lot of gay people in these meetings, and having conversations with them has enabled me to just hear a different side. So I'll give you a couple different stories. One was a 5 or 6 year old kid who's, I guess, was exhibiting certain tendencies at a young age that made his father worried that he was going to become gay, or he is gay. And his father at a very young age began showing him pornography. so that he doesn't go in that direction, and teaching him how to masturbate and playing with him in order to get him aroused from pornography. So those kind of things. And he was so confused. Like, was I sexually abused? Was my father trying to give me a lesson? Like, what was going on there? And whatever was going on, his sexuality was abused at that place.
Most definitely. That's sad.
Yeah. And one other story, which eventually I realized that porn is almost worse than strip clubs and almost everything else I was engaged in. And not from a relationship standpoint. My wife would be much more devastated, I'm sure, if I slept with someone else than if I watched pornography.
Right.
However, simply from a recovered standpoint, there's something about there being absolutely no one there, like that total isolation that pornography allows for, that I find is much more destructive, and that I've come to realize that on some level is much more destructive than some of the other stuff that I've done. Even though those have more risks and health risks and are more dangerous, and all of that world is much more, more dangerous physically, but the danger of pornography and what it's done to my mind, and you know, it's not as if when I stopped, I have never watched again. I've stumbled a bunch of times.
Right.
But the last 2.5 years or so, almost 3 years, I've been clean.
That's awesome. Congratulations. You're accomplishing your number one goal, as you shared on the TED Talk. We're going to link the TED Talk to this episode. You mentioned that your number one goal is to never look at porn again, and you're accomplishing that goal day by day.
So yeah, I should clarify that, because I heard someone... Someone misunderstood that from me, what I meant. Like, my number one goal, like my goal in life is not to watch porn. Not exactly. It's my barometer of how well things are going in my life is whether or not I'm watching porn. So if I'm not watching porn, like, that's my goal. My goal is that if I can stay away from porn, then it's a sign that the other things in my life are going relatively well. That's what I meant by that.
Right.
Not that my end all and be all is not to watch porn, because you put me in a coma and I don't watch porn, and that's not my goal.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a good clarification. Can you talk to a little bit how the progression happened with pornography? Because you started off with the magic mailbox, like the literal mailbox, and then it progressed towards downloading pictures and saving them in these files. And then you mentioned some harder core stuff later on in life with the smartphone being available. And as that progressed, I just was wondering, did you notice, were you aware at the time of the desensitization happening?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I was crossing lines that I said I would never cross. So when I start, not only that, I shouldn't even say that, I was crossing lines of things that once repulsed me, right? So the first time when I was 13 or 14 and I saw total nudity, we'll be a little graphic. I saw just toplessness. I was like, whoa, I was starstruck. I hadn't seen that before. And that wasn't nearly as attractive to me as seeing someone not fully clothed, but seeing someone, say, in a bikini.
Right.
And then the first time I saw, you know, complete nudity, I was like, whoa, like, what the hell was that? And each one stunned me, or I didn't like it at first. And then eventually I started, I was like, whoa, this stuff that I once didn't like, now I enjoy more. And the other stuff is not even interesting for me anymore. Like a Victoria's Secret couldn't even get me excited after a while. Now I had this stuff. Then, you know, when I started, it was really dial-up internet. Right, so you're downloading a picture on one of these websites, and it can take 45 seconds for the picture to show up on your screen. Fast forward, you know, 7-8 years, and we're, you know, you're watching full-on videos of some very graphic stuff. So, yeah, sure, I was very aware of the progression. And then, you know, I'll talk about this because I think a lot of people struggle with this, and a lot of people have reached out to me struggle with this, is that the porn starts crossing lines that start making you question your identity, your sexual identity. So, you know, you're looking across something and you see stuff that are very physically abusive, say. Or I see something very physically abusive. It's like, whoa, like, why would someone do that to another person? And you watch it and it's kind of like a little bit of a turnoff. I don't know if you watch UFC at all.
Yeah.
Like the first couple of times I watched UFC, I couldn't get past the blood and the gore. Then afterwards, now I enjoy watching the fight. So it's kind of the same thing. It was like, whoa, like, why would you do that to another person? And then I started enjoying it. But then, I mean, I know a lot of people, and me included, who while exploring has gone into gay porn or transsexual porn or porn that is completely not in line with who you view yourself or who I viewed myself. So, okay, what is, like, what's going on here? Yeah, so there are actually lines that are crossed that then start bringing into real questions about yourself and your own identity, and did I enjoy that, and what did I like about that? I mean, yeah, for sure. It gets progressive fast, and it gets, and the effects are very real.
Right. Wow. Well,
and I've had this conversation with a lot of people, right? If it was just me and one other guy I ran into, I probably wouldn't be able to bring it up. But I've had this conversation with so many people where the porn has just progressed to ways that they completely don't view themselves, and they start questioning who they are.
Well, we get thousands and thousands of emails from people, and a portion of those are people who are expressing similar things that you just expressed. And so it's very common for this to happen. And so you're not alone in your experience. Sharing your experience is helping other people realize, it's helping them increase their self-awareness. Because I think a lot of people, my original question was, were you aware of the desensitization? I think a lot of people in the moment, they may be aware of it, but it's like this subconscious awareness. I don't know. I'm no therapist, but it's a weird concept, because looking back on it, they might see it more clearly, but in the moment, it's a little bit hazy.
Right. So the part of it that's hazy is that I've just crossed four boundaries that I said I never would, right? I wasn't going to go to nudity. I wasn't going to go to full, I wasn't going to toplessness, full nudity, more extreme versions of stuff.
Right.
That, you know, some stuff I mentioned, whether bondage or gay or transsexual or whatever it is. And to say, okay, what's next? Like that's where there was blurred. At some point in time, it's essentially what happens is, I think what's interesting about porn, and you want to talk about another aha moment, it's interesting about porn is the novelty of porn. It's just this endless novelty that exists. We can watch this plus the next person plus the next, and just there's so many different variations of people and things that they're doing that make it exciting, and people that they're doing it with. And I'd come across on YouTube a interview, and it was something like why I left the porn industry, I think it was called. And a woman, a female porn star, was explaining why she's no longer a porn star. And what happened is that she had walked in on her boyfriend masturbating to porn. And in that moment, she had this realization that people who are engaging in porn are not there because who they're watching in porn is more attractive than their partner. Because until then, she was able to lie to herself and say, you know, I'm much more attractive than most women, and that's why there are men all over the world who are masturbating to pictures of me or to images or videos of me having sex. But in actuality, the one person in the world who she was okay with having sex for free had no interest in having sex with her at that moment, and instead was watching someone else in pornography. And that's when she realized what she's feeding into, and she left the industry. And that's what porn is. Porn is not, I don't like this, so I like that. It's going to be progressive for most people because of the novel aspects of it. And that's one of the things we're feeding, is the novelty of porn.
Yeah, you mentioned this in your TED Talk on the year-end review that this certain website puts out every year. You mentioned that it's like 90, I think in 2018 it was 92 million hits per day on this single website. And you mentioned like over 4 million, basically almost 5 million videos, new videos uploaded to this one single website. Like the novelty is endless. One thing that I've heard, and it stuck with me for a long time, is that if you want to feel peace on your deathbed, then try to avoid being deceitful, resentful, and arrogant. And it's interesting because I feel like porn fuels all three of those attributes.
Deceit, I see. Arrogant. Okay.
Arrogant because porn oftentimes it's a selfish act. At least in my case, it was about instant gratification. It was about selfishness. It was about me thinking that my biological urge was more important than my relationship with my wife.
Anyway. Yeah, what I heard there also is, when I'm watching a porn scene, I imagine most people is, you're a stand-in for someone there. Meaning, what's happening, the fantasy is that I am one of the people in that video.
Right. I think there's a whole genre of pornography called POV, point of view porn, meaning that you, the camera angles are that you are there.
Okay, so now, right, so you talk about the progression, so I missed this. I guess this is, a new one with VR or stuff like that. Fortunately, I missed it, because since 2012, 2013, I've been on the fight against it. So even when I did slip, it was, you know, for an evening or something. I didn't get to go back full force the way I used to and really explore it. But yeah, I mean, that's this stuff is dangerous.
Yeah.
You talk about that, but you see, there you don't have to work to get the fantasy, I guess, the POV porn.
Right.
And so when you talk about arrogant, it's like, yeah, like I'm the man, right, doing all this stuff.
Right.
Right, there's, I see that. Talk to me about the resentment, though. Why do you feel?
So I can say that today I'm grateful for my challenge that I had with pornography, because I feel like I'm a better person because of it. But at one time I was very resentful towards my challenge with pornography. It made me resentful towards life. It made me resentful towards my wife sometimes, because I felt like if I was in the mood to engage in sex, that she should be too. It put forth false expectations, and those false expectations perpetuated resentment.
Interesting. Resentments and addiction are often linked, and it's linked very heavily in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's one of the reasons I asked, because in the big book of AA, this is, I believe, a direct quote. It says, resentments are the number one offender. It kills more people. It gets more alcoholics than anything else. Something like that.
Interesting.
So.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, in my experience, that's one of my biggest aha moments, is when I realized that if my wife isn't in the mood to be sexual, then that's fine. It took about 3 years of addressing my challenge with pornography. 3 years later is when I kind of had that aha moment, and I was like, oh my goodness. I was so grateful for that aha moment, and it's freed me from resentment.
Yeah, so. I've heard that exactly. It's like, I only watched porn because my wife didn't want to have sex with me then. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay. And when she did, you were done. Right? Right. And the reason you didn't want to was not because you were in the middle of doing chores, was because you had just orgasmed a half hour ago.
Right.
Right. So, but that's the denial that this stuff allows for.
Right.
What's it like on your side, just to be so steeped in the conversation about porn? And that's happened to me somewhat in the last 6-7 weeks since I did the TED Talk.
Right.
But what's it like for you? It's been a few years, right, on Fight the New Drug?
Yeah, so I started addressing my challenge about 3 years ago, back in 2016. And I've worked with Fight the New Drug for about 2.5 years, yeah.
Do you find that triggering at all? I mean, to sit there steeped in the conversation about pornography and not to engage in it, or you find it more helpful?
More helpful, because if you look at one of the main steps in AA, since we were talking about AA, is to help another person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
step 12, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think there's a reason why it's step number 12, because I think it's one of the most crucial steps to continue down the path of a healthy lifestyle, is helping other people. And so for me, I think working with Fight the New Drug, and even before I worked with Fight the New Drug, as I did the projects of 30 and 30 and Handcuffs and Coast to Coast and Chains, it was all about helping other people. And I was willing to take on some risk, and I was willing to be vulnerable, because I wanted to do my part in changing the conversation around the harmful effects of pornography. And all of these things, all these conversations that I've had and all these interactions and all these studies that I've looked into have definitely increased my awareness, increased my education, and increased catharsis or connection. And I think that's why that 12th step is so important, because it increases connection. And so to answer your question, I think it definitely has helped me. I feel very fortunate.
Yeah, I hear that from the perspective of helping people. That's certainly been the case with me. In AA, one of the, they have a lot of little cute quotes. And one of them is, we keep what we have by giving it away.
Yeah.
And right, so I hear it from that aspect. But one of the things that made me ask is when I was in my TED talk, I actually quote Fight the New Drug. And as I was researching, you know, I knew I needed a little bit of statistics in there in order to attract the audience. Most of it I spent on the story of it, but I did sprinkle in a few quotes. And I found that as I was researching some of those things, I found myself a little bit more
triggered.
Triggered, yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, knowing that porn perpetuates false expectations and knowing that porn perpetuates sexual assault and it's inseparably connected to sex trafficking, I think at this point I don't have a desire to look or engage in that behavior at all. And who knows, maybe I can't say that it will never come back, but I can honestly say that I never thought I'd be able to say this either, because I tried stopping so many times. I tried to walk away from this unhealthy behavior.
Do you consider yourself an addict to, like, addicted to it, or just something?
I don't.
Okay, no. So this actually could be the difference between addiction and not addiction.
So I think at one point I was. Well, I don't know, because I've never been diagnosed. I've only done self-diagnosis based off the information I have. So I think that I, like, a simple way to define addiction is if you do something chronically and compulsively. And so from 8 years old, I don't think I was addicted to porn until 2007. So that's when smartphones were in my pocket, and that's when I feel like it became an addiction. And but I don't know for sure, because I was never diagnosed. But today I don't feel like I, it's weird because I know the saying in AA is once an addict, always an addict, right?
Well, there are different degrees of that. So maybe it would be helpful to parse the two. There's physical addiction and then like AA's definition of addiction. Physical addiction, there's actually a biological need, quote unquote, that your body feels, right, when it doesn't have something that it's had continuously. And that can be to anything, right? If you stay off of sugar for the next 30, 45 days, if you're not used to that, your body will go through withdrawal. For some people who are addicted, that phase of getting out of withdrawal, which is the physical addiction, they don't need AA. And that's not what I mean by an addict. Then there's just a physical chemical addiction that someone has to wean themselves off of. And once they get to that point, then there's no real desire to go back to it.
Right.
However, with AA's definition of addiction is, I believe, an allergic response to the chemical, right? So once there's a little bit of it, the response is like, one is too many, 1,000 is not enough. It's another quote in AA. Like, one is too many to have and 1,000 is not enough. Like, once we start, it just goes full force. So I'll give you an example of, in my case, something that triggered me really badly. I was in a bathroom, in a restaurant in Miami Beach. I go to the bathroom, and it was like a French bistro of sorts, and all of the pictures in the bathroom were of women in like bondage sorts, like tied up, very, very naked. I was like, whoa, I could not believe it. And, you know, I didn't go there to look at porn, but I had seen porn. And when I came back to, I was, you know, kind of stunned, and I walked back out of the room and I felt it. I felt the surge through me and I knew I had to do something. So I told my wife about it. And then when the waiter came, I mentioned to the waiter, I just let him know. I said, hey, you know, I've been, one of my main goals is to stay away from pornography. And if you're going to have it in your bathroom, you should have a big ass sign on the door.
Right.
It's going to be there, because that just hit me in the head. I'm standing under the urinal. I look up and I see this picture and I'm like, okay, it's staring me in my face. The next time I went to that restaurant, about 6 weeks later, and then someone else went to the bathroom before me and said, hey, there's no pictures on the wall. So actually my conversation with them got them to take it down, which was cool to,
that is cool.
Cool to know. But just in terms of that, like, the AA definition of alcohol is you can force someone to drink alcohol, and then there'll be that response that their body just kicks in and feels like it needs more, even if they stayed away from it for 15, 20 years. And it's why they say once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, or once an addict, always an addict. But that's not true for everyone who experienced physical addiction.
Yeah. I think because I still feel very seldomly, but I still feel that surge that you're talking about. But my logical side of my brain is able to say, like, hey, like, actually, you don't want that. And you don't want to walk down that road where 3 years ago, I couldn't have, like, the logical side wasn't speaking loud enough.
You know, it's someone who saw my TED Talk said to me that, and he sent me an article to support it, that there's no such thing as addiction or pornography. It's all bullshit. And the article was in Psychology Today and had, you know, something that, you know, it's people who are experiencing religious guilt who have this, and the correlation is more religious guilt and everything else. So what I responded to them, I said, let's say you're right. Let's say you're 100% right. I said, to call anyone an addict, just like calling someone ADD or OCD, is just, it's name calling, and it's not a nice thing to do, you know, to call someone an addict, right? So when someone calls someone an addict, or call someone ADD or OCD, is only to direct the therapy. So someone may not have ADD, but if they take a medication that's been proven to work for ADD and it helps them, then for their purposes, saying they have ADD is useful. So I said, for my purposes, calling it an addiction and then using the modalities and therapies that have been known to be helpful for what you would consider scientific addictions work for me. So it totally works for me to call it an addiction. And in as much as that name calling works, it's true. And call yourself an addict if it's directing therapy that's going to help you. So I think that's also, it doesn't actually need to be diagnosed as it. If you're going in that direction and you're using, it's working, right? At the end of the day, I've done things exactly like people did for alcohol addiction, and today I'm sober. It effing worked. What are you going to say? I'm not an addict? Fine.
Right. Right. One thing I have to say on that, though, is I think this person who sent you the article, the Psychology Today article saying that porn addiction isn't real, I wonder if they're aware. It's not in the DSM, and the U.S. uses the DSM often to help diagnose. But it is recognized in the ICD-11. So we're definitely working towards recognizing it as it should be recognized. But I liked your explanation. Like, if it's helping me, then use that phrase and benefit from using it in that way.
Yeah, I'll call myself an addict all day long if it's giving me a good way to get out of the problem.
I love
it. That's for certain.
Ellie, you are a good person. We appreciate you. To be honest, like, I just want to acknowledge for a brief moment how traumatizing that experience must have been, the sexual abuse you experienced as a child. And to take that and to open up about it and be vulnerable and to move away from shame through connection is something that we, myself and our audience, is very, very grateful for. And then also I want to acknowledge your wife how amazing she is, because she's also helping in her way in supporting what you're doing as well.
She's been unbelievably supportive. And as a matter of fact, in October, there was a film festival in Canada who saw my TED Talk, and they reached out to me asking if I would speak there. And as I understood what they were doing, I agreed to go up there to speak. And when I was talking to the host, I mentioned my wife and how supportive she's been. And he said, would she talk? Because that, I gave some illustrations of that, just how supportive she was. So would she talk? Because she'd be amazingly powerful. And I asked her and she said, yeah. So for the first time, her and I will be giving a talk together. It won't be recorded, but we'll be doing a talk together in October, which is really, really special for me. It's a special moment that we're able to, you know, it's something that created disconnection between us, this addiction. And now to be used as a connection, I'm sure it'll be a very special moment on stage
for us
to see how, you know, we can talk about stuff. And I'm really interested to hear what she has to say. Because
I just got the chills. I just got the chills, Eli, because it's going to be very powerful. I'm excited for that. Where's it at? In Canada?
In Canada, yeah.
Oh, wow.
There's a film festival that on mental health. It's called Au Contraire.
Which part of Canada?
Montreal.
Wow.
Au Contraire. And the fifth day of the film festival is dedicated to addiction.
Dude, and I love it.
Yeah. We'll be talking.
Well, there. That's amazing. Ellie, you are... once again, I can't thank you enough for being vulnerable, for sharing your experience. It's a powerful experience. And if your goal was to help other people, you're definitely doing that. And so thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, if I can just leave someone with a clear takeaway in terms of what to do, if someone's stuck, to me and everyone I speak to, I say the same thing. It starts with having the courage to reach out to one person and ask for help. It's like that's the ingredient, that's a prerequisite to get better, is to turn to someone, and not just someone randomly. It could be sending an email to fight the new drug. That's turning to someone and saying, hey, I'm stuck in this. I don't know what to do. And there's a lot of vulnerability in sending that email. But doing that is what I found the first step in getting help.
Like kind of like your overall message from your TED Talk was sharing our hardships helps us move through shame and into healing for yourself and others. Like one thing I imagine you probably never thought that you'd be helping so many people with this challenge that you had. And I think that a lot of our listeners can also kind of they can relate to that. Like they're going through a challenge right now and it may seem like the worst thing ever, but eventually that challenge can help yourself and other people. So
I've introduced probably 5 topics on this. During our discussion that, at a certain point in time, I thought that people knowing about this would be the death of me.
Yeah. But it's actually bringing life, right? It's bringing power.
We're talking because of that. How did this conversation happen? And this has been an amazing conversation for me. And how did this connection be created? Because I stood on the TED stage talking about pornography, right? The thing that I shouldn't talk about. And that film festival that I'll be talking with my wife, how did that happen? By getting up and talking. But it doesn't start there. It's not the first thing someone does when they want to get healthy is stand up on a stage and say in front of the whole world, hey, I have a porn addiction. That's not the best way. The best way is starting with one person and someone who's an expert in this. And I'm sure Fight the New Drug has tons of resources for that. Someone reaches out and says, hey, I need help with this. And great, here's where to go. We're not therapists, but we know someone you can talk to.
Right. That's a great piece of advice to end on, Ellie.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Consider Before Consuming. Consider Before Consuming is brought to you by Fight the New Drug. Fight the New Drug is a non-religious, non-legislative organization that exists to provide individuals the opportunity to make an informed decision regarding pornography by raising awareness on its harmful effects using only science, facts, and personal accounts. Remember, join us on November 22nd for Rep the Movement Day. Rep the Movement Day is simple. Simply start a conversation by posting on your social media using #RepTheMovement. Thanks again for joining us. Until next time.